Mr. Waller, Reel 6. We're talking about the boat. Was it overcrowded?
There was a lot of people on board, but as I said before, we were having troubles all over the world. So what you were doing, you were taking zaps out from other places. We had a full battalion of the German ladies, a full battalion. I think there was about 800 men if there was left. And you would have drafts. So wherever we were going, people were getting off. There was nobody getting on. But people would get off at Portshead for detachment there. There were people would get off probably at Aden, Colombo, Singapore, Hong Kong, and Japan. I think you went to Japan after you went to Busan for this. But there was a lot of people on the board.
And the sleeping conditions, what were those?
Well, we were right way down, a lot of steps, and they were bunks. I think there were three. They were all metal, and you didn't have much kit, because most of the kit would be in the hole. You just had, I think we'd be in this room with this green equipment as well. We didn't have the blankboard, which was a great thing. We had no bullshit that way. It was olive greens, that's the word I'm looking for. OGs, as they call them. Olive greens. And we'd been issued with those, so it was getting into the warmer climate. So you didn't want any heavy clothing. And we just had the light stuff, necessary shaving equipment. And it was all right, it was there, you went to sleep, you got up the next morning, you went to the canteen, you did your big PT up till about lunchtime. Then in the afternoon you'd be writing letters or reading, or if you've got fatigues or jangles, which I did once, going through the Indian Ocean, I had a button off the shirt and got sunburned. And we'd gone for something, maybe it was an injection, possibly had typhus, cholera. I think we'd already had the smallpox and the tetanus, cholera, and something else, but I can't remember what it is. It's in the pay book. And the doctor saw it, and I got 3 days extra fatigue, which was just carrying more or less ice from the ice place to the bar, and helping to break it up for when you wanted ice in your beer or your juice on the night. That's where my time was spent on them 3 years for things. That's the only time I ever did. I did some later on.
Did they give you any talks or lectures on career itself and what to expect?
I don't remember anything like that. But to go back when you were on about the VD, when we didn't go short, the port said they wouldn't do that, none of that. But Aden, Colombo, and Singapore, we did route marches. But before we went to shore, when we were coming to go off the boat, the medical people were there with the condom and said, hey, you want this and use it. You used to get DD film shows about it, you see. You all had to go down in your turn and see the film show. And then you all said to the doctor, how many do you want? And you don't want anything like that. I'm nervous of it. And every time we went to shore, that was drilled into you. That, I don't remember that. You were always there for that. But apart from that, I thought it was a great trip. 6 weeks, somebody paid for it, you're out in the sunshine. No hassles, you were with your friends.
More of an adventure, do you think?
It was an adventure. It was a great adventure. Look, I think young people look forward to this. I mean, we have this now with young people. Girls as well as boys, and the world's an oyster now, they can be away and do what they want. Well, I thought that was great. A lot of people thought it was great.
Were there any men that you know of in the battalion who were reluctant to be where they were?
Yes. There was two lads from Stanley. I was only caught to see one on Friday. And they whinged on from going into Bransford to coming out. Bransford after the 2 years. And one was married and he'd served his time, he had a little business going, and then he had to go and do his national service. And the other lad had served his time as well. I don't know if he was married though, but he was a town served craftsman. And he wins from day one to the last day of coming out. Well, a lot of them, no, it was an adventure, and they were, a lot of them were just pop happy. And it's only later when they put the things down in paper and submit them to the magazine to be read about it, but I didn't think he was like that. It seemed the same on the side of the person.
But they just were mooned around. They weren't trying to get out of it.
They did everything they had to do, but they just didn't. Well, they count the calendar there, you know, cross the calendar off every year. They never liked day one today. And it's rather funny to deviate a little bit. I go to the Korean Veterans meetings, and we got the signal sergeant in one time. And I said to this chap, he comes to the meetings, I said, there's a signature. Oh, he said, I hate him. I said, I absolutely hate him. I said, this is for the audience. He said, I absolutely hate his guts. I said, what did you know? He said, what he did to me. I said, I know, but that's past. And I bet he took 6 months or 7 months before it. I kept saying, well, come on, I'll let you do. No. And as soon as I took him down, he said to him, mention his name. Yes. And he shook hands. And he said, can you remember this? He said, no, I can't. He said, I've hated your guts from that day to this. And he said, it's gone now. You know, and they all speak and have a little patter when they come to the meetings. But even all the years after, he was very bitter about it. Well, he still have some people. I have another friend who, where we tried to get him into the association, and he said, it cost me. He was going to college to be a teacher. And the National Service got him and took him there, you see, and brought back. And he said, well, I've got 2 years of his pension, I think that's what he was on about, that, you know, I've lost. I said, well, everybody's lost something, we just can't, you know, it's passing out. No, he said, I've got nothing to do with you, people.
Yes, there must have been one or two, particularly on the professional side, felt that this was.
They would
look on National Service as. An encumbrance rather than an adventure.
Yes. I mean, he had a good job, but no, he did it because he lost 2 years of his pension.
The journey itself, you say, was pretty quiet.
We had one spell in the Arabian Sea, I think. We got a bit of a typhoon or something, and we had to skirt around the fringes of it and put this 200 mile off course. And I remember it was. Everybody was seasick, most everybody I could see, and they had ropes around to stop you before you could get to the handrail to keep you on. And that was a bit, you know, you were upset, you couldn't eat. Some people could eat without eating anything, but come on down and over, you couldn't face anything at all. No. But I enjoyed it, yeah. Seeing different places, different things. I went ashore at Hong Kong with a lad from Hartlepool, who was the next door neighbour, he lived over the street, who was the missionary there at the Soldiers' Seaman's School, or whatever it was. And he had a little Vespa scooter with a sidecar on. And he took us all around Hong Kong. We were up on the peak, we went to the race course. He took us to the missionary for a meal. And we had a great, and we only had 4 hours in Hong Kong, and I saw all sorts of Hong Kong on the back of his scooter. It was marvellous.
So you didn't stop over in Hong Kong?
Oh, no. We all these places. As you were going out, because we had a tailwind, as I remember, you got about 4 hours. And then coming back, because of the headwind, you only got about 2 hours. But no, it was just the ports of call, and he wasn't here, it was Steamer Point. And we did a 3 mile road march to the officers' club, whatever it was, and we marched back again. And then we got a couple hours there for the beer. And it's ironic how that. All the places we call that, I met somebody, or almost met somebody, from my own village. That I went to show with a lad from my village, and we were walking down, we had the old greens on, and this chap came down in a white shirt and slacks and sunglasses and a camera, and he said, hold it there, and I'll take your photograph and send it to your mother. And my friend said, you don't know me, mother. He said, no, you believe it, I'm in the same class as you, don't school. And he'd gone into the IAF when he left school. And he was making a career of it. And I went to Hong Kong, not Hong Kong, Colombia. And we just got through the gates, like bolting in after the night out. And this chap came down and said, there's somebody up there looking for you. I said, what do you call him? He said, Bobby Payers. Bobby Payers. I said, and he was going to New Zealand. He said he just told us that, but he wouldn't let his boat out at the end. And we just had to shout through the railings, really. We left on the Tuesday, I think, from Southampton, and he left the following Monday on his way to New Zealand, and we were both in Colombia together. And it's incredible. And then when I get to Singapore, the cousin lives at Trindon. She was there, she'd married an army lad, and she did a living in Singapore. And then when I went to Shaw Don Cove, I said, nobody will know me here if I'm going around with this missionary on his motorbike.
Where did you go to on leaving Hong Kong?
We were in Hong Kong for 4 hours. So we didn't do anything there, but I went with this chap from Hartlepool, and he went to this missionary who had lived near in Hartlepool, and he just acted as a host and took us around Hong Kong on this scooter.
And where did you sail to from Hong Kong?
Busan. We went straight to Busan.
Do you remember the date you arrived there?
At Busan? Well, I'd say the 3rd of September or the 13th of September. The big highlight that was the big American band there, the Blackies, and the one inside the Silver Ford. He must have been about 14 foot high with his Silver Ford on. He was a great big chap, he was. And I'd say the music they played was Simply Blue, the Dale, yes, I said Lemmy Blues. And we marched off that. But it was, you knew what it was like war because it was shanty town and it was smelling, it was awful. And then we got on the train there, and this is a total opposite to the nice train in Holland we were on. And you got in there and you were wooden seats, there was no windows. There was a machine gun at each end of the carriage. Apparently you were troubled by the rings or something like that. But they brought you to me and they said, there's four of you to a seat. Send one of your representatives out and you'll get your meal. And you got a tin of potatoes, a tin of carrots, a tin of something else. And there was four tins. And you already had your tin opener to open the tins. And you had to put them all and get a few out, and that was your meal. And you, I don't know how they did the tea, or they just had water. But it was a long, long, slow ride up to the really top John, I think it was. Well, we got off there and onto wagons, and we went to a little place called Chestnut Grove, which was like a settling in area. You were on the canvas. You used to do rope notches to get you used to the conditions. Well, they say it was September, it was dry there and dusty because of the roads. And as you walked on the roads, it had all been made by the American engineers, and they all had these feminine signs of dangerous curves and soft shoulders. You always remember them, they stick out in your mind.
How many were there in a tent?
Oh, you might have had. It was 20, and maybe still good 20, maybe.
And that was pretty tight packing, was it?
Well, you would have your bed, and I don't know what to do. You didn't have lockers or anything like that. That was always a small point. There was never anywhere to put anything. You might have had a box for somebody had moved out of there, you see, left a box for you. And we were there for a few days, and listened with, and then everybody was allocated to the different duties. But I got a jeep then because I was still the driver for the signal officers, rather than being the batman operator. Not so much operator, but the batman and the driver business. And we would go to a different place and you'd have to go and you'd just have to ride around the world. And when I went back to Korea in 1985, we went down, I was reading actually, and we went down this road, and my missus says to me, you know, where are we now? And I looked out and I said, oh, we're in Gloucester Valley. She said, how do you know that? I said, well, I remember this. It's all this time after. We turned the corner and we were right beside Saundery, the Gloucester's memorial place. She said, yeah, you're right. I said, well, I knew someone saw that. I knew exactly where we were. But
so the early days that when you're in this tented camp, toughening you up a bit.
Just was to get you acclimatised too quickly. I don't think we were there maybe 3 weeks before we went and moved into the line and took over from the in Shropshire's right in the But while we were there, you, I say you had your meals there, which were our own cooks were doing it with their Korean partners that were doing all the, you know, the work. You still got fatigues, I suppose, you still got grand duties. But from there, I think the people would go to the different the platoons split up. And the only way I would see them, which I did get to see them, was by two methods. One would be the driver for the signal officer. When he went to visit the rifle companies, you would see your platoon lads then. You know, how are you doing? Well, not so bad. What do you want? We were short of batteries for the 31 set. We want this for something else. I said, all right, I'll see about it when I go back and, you know, do 70 up with a supply truck, something like that. But they used to get a battery for the 31 set, and it had a socket with about 12 holes in there. What they used to do is you see two bits of wiring and put them together and make your cigarette. That you'd get to watch. It never went in the radio, it was just used to make your cigarette. That's what it was for. So they always shot them there. Batteries for the 31 set. But I used to get around a fair bit that way. And the other way was that every night the CO, more in the line than out of the line really, had what they called the SDS, which is Special Delivery Service, which one lad did. They used, one of the other lads from Bath was the driver. He used to take it out. And then when he packed it in, I got the job, just for a short period of time, because the MT section had decided by then that all the MT was going to be operated by MT staff, and not by, because the vehicles weren't being maintained. I couldn't see me being looking after a vehicle, looking after an officer, and doing this batman and signaling all the other duties. So in a sense, I got sacked from that, maybe, but not looking after the jeep. But, oh, we took over from the 1st Royal Australian Regiment, and we went up on the night previous, the signal officer to where...
This was your first one, we took off from the Shropshires, I think you said earlier.
Yeah, we took off from the Shropshires, yeah. that's right. Yes.
And do you recall that move that into the line?
No, I think the Shropshires were out of the line. The Shropshires would be in Chestnut Grove, and when we landed, we'd already had an advance party there. They would pack up and go. Now, when we went into the line from there, we would take over from the 1st Royal Australian Regiment. And I remember we went up, I had the jeep then, and we took it up, and we had to stay overnight. I stayed in this hut with these two Australians, and the next morning, I've always been a breakfast fan, I was at home, and I could smell this breakfast. And I said to this, I said, what kind of smell? I said, breakfast. He said, to do, you know, help yourself here. And you went out and you went at the backside, just over the top of the hill. And the cooks had the petrol burners out, and you could have anything for breakfast. There was eggs and bacon and sausage and fried bread. And I said, well, what do you, just get a plate and help yourself. Whatever you want, get it. And then you go and find somewhere to sit down and eat it. Well, it was a lovely morning, and this breakfast was magnificent, it was. Because of our breakfast, you got a square egg, and the bread, the egg fitted your bread, and some porridge, and that was it, and two slices of bread. Well, our food wasn't all that clever in Korea. You enjoyed it more out of the American sea packs you used to get. At least I did. It was something different.
And what was in the sea packs?
Well, you would, if you were in the line, you could come down and off the hill, and you would, I'm saying we came down where we were, without any like BHQ, and they would give you six like shoe boxes. And we had three tins, which was breakfast, dinner, tea, and your fourth tin was a sweet, but there was no identification marks on these things, you didn't know what it was. When you opened the little cardboard box with all the other extras you got, you could tell you could either be pork and beans, or it would be a little hamburger and beans, or it would be something else, another American hash or something like that, you see, which you would spoon out and put in it in the product they did cold. And then you had a little tin of jam and a little round tin of cocoa. Yes, you also have just had a little tablet that you used to heat. And they had a little setup, you put this like a little candle affair. It only burnt to heat whatever you put on the top, but it did the job for you. And you then you got chewing gum and toilet paper and matches and a packet of usually Camels. You never got the Lucky Strikes, which were supposed to be the best, or Chesterfields or Philip Morris. And you got all that in another little paper bag for you. And you got six of those, that lasted you for 6 days. And then you always got a fresh meal, which was normally stew and biscuits. So you got a fresh meal once a week while you were, that's my evidence of being in the line.
And after 6 days you got another pack, did you?
If you were still there, yes. Whatever you were doing, you see. Depending if you got moved about to other parts of the battalion, you see. I did the first part from Chestnut Grove to when we took over from the 1st Australian Regiment. So that would be, take us up to about the middle of November or all of November. And then we took the jeep office and we came out of the line and we went to a place called the Reservoir. And this is where I think I fell foul of the signal officer, because he was on this hill here and now up this ravine here, and I had to get up here and come out down here and across the parade ground and up this hill and put the kettle on and put the heating on for him and wake him up and make sure the water was hot first and make him a cup of tea. Then I had to come all the way back down here again and do my own thing, ready for the parade, or we'd go and have breakfast. This was the out of the line, then you were in like a reserve position, and then you had to go and do the parade again, and then you would do the other duties that you had to do with the signals or whatever the signal office wanted. But I got a bit tired of it there, so it was cold as well in the morning when you got up, and you then touched the metal. It only was like a metal frame with a punch hole over the top. But it, your fingers stuck to it and took the skin off. So you used to light a fire first and you used to have these shell cases with the drip feed in, with the diesel and petrol and oil all mixing together. And light a bit of paper and turn the drip feed on and wait till that was going before you got up, because it was that cold. And I got sick of galloping across there, so I just started to get sloppy and I got sacked. So that put me back into VHQ.
Can we, before we go to that bit, and we'll come to that, of course, can we go back to the hillside, this very first position that you moved onto?
Yes.
Where were you in relation to the rest of the battalion on the hill?
Well, I was with VHQ. Without looking at the map, I would think, well, the rifle company would be in front of us, I would think. And the way, you see, you never knew where you were. I mean, all the hills look the same. You go down the hill, you turn left, and they put you under the Nevis and Air Supply Road, and you would say, Lado, you're only down there, and you have to turn off left for B Company. And that's the way along there, we'll go and see those. And you'd have all the other officers with all their jigs, the adjutant, the CO, and the 2IC, and they were all riding out to the different places as well.
And this was at the back of the hills where they were relatively safe, presumably, well, out of sight.
This was, well, it would be, I don't know really, because from what I can remember, when they said about the Commonwealth Division, was always in like a horseshoe out here. But I mean, it's easy to say that we could be on Brussels, and the next company could be on Tofteren. So you've got all that paddy in between, you see, to cross all there. I'm surmised at that because I can't exactly say, but you would be in close to, I mean, when we used to go and lay a telephone line, which you had to do, it wasn't very far. You could say, well, look, the line's out at so-and-so, they want a new line or an extra line in, and these were only a third of a mile, these rails of cable, If we send two men with you to carry the cable and you go along, two of you used to go. I don't know whether one was a squad or whether you were on your own. Sometimes you used to go with four of you to go out and do these, if there had been a break. And you would, they didn't say it very far away, but then again, the company would be split up as well. You'd have VHQ of the company and the platoons would be out in front of it. And then, in other cases, like the First World War, the trench system just ran round the hill. So you could be on this bit here, out of this forward point, and the next to you could be anybody. You didn't know who you were, and then you came back again, and you know, you run round here, and you follow the trench system round the hill, till the hill finished, and then you go to the next one, where you'd have another company. Where the support companies were in relation to this, the anti-tank, not the anti-tank, it was a drone, and the machine gun and the mortars, I've no idea. They seem to be right out in front of everybody. I know I remember going to, well, four or five of us went to mend some cables, and we had to go down this, let's call it Bum Alley or something. I mean, the trees were about that tall, and everything was sparse, like waste ground, but you didn't go in because they were all minefields, and you just followed this track down, and you came to where the mortar cartel was. And they just seemed to be out in the open, you didn't know where. You know, all the sandbags and everything was, you know, you only could have sort of thing. But
so, in a sense, you're in this very first position that you were on, this first hill you were on. You were at the back of it. You weren't.
No. We were at the back of it. Yes, we had the signal exchange was here at the back of the hill. The accommodation was stepped up the hill in sandbagged places, different to later when you're into the rock. That was the first place, yes, and the bathroom was just to come to the bottom of the hill, and you could go down and get a shower once a week. But that was the thing you had to be very careful of, if you didn't have the water. You know, we used to get bathed, we got American steel helmet from somewhere, and marvellous thing about their steel helmets, it'd be solid. You don't let the water out, maybe the British steel helmet has a screw hole in it and the water runs out of that. That's ridiculous to get more steel. But then I mean, there's a type two parts. But we had an American steel helmet, that's what you got to wash in. And sometimes you can get three or four or five of you and get a wash out of it and a shave out of it. And you had to wash and shave every morning.
And we had there was still that discipline there.
Oh yes, you were all inspected every morning and you had to stick to, if you were issued with this equipment, and they had to wear this equipment. I mean, we had one man got an American carbine there and come on parade with his thumb down like he's by a dirt or somebody like that till the RSM put it in. We're all right getting a souvenir, but you know, starting to wear it's a different kettle of fish.
And again, on this very first position that you're on, where did you live? Where did you sleep and eat?
I was, I just slept above. And it's about that height,
about the window height.
Yes, just the exchange. We had three or four lads did work the exchange all the time. Four, I think it was four men, in which would include a Lance Corporal or a Corporal would be with the rifle companies, and would be the signallers back to the BHQ. We already had a wireless link from BHQ back to A echelon and to B echelon, and there would also be a well signals link from BHQ back to probably where they had all this artillery connection, because everybody was connected either radio or telephone to everybody else. If you wanted the firepower, you could get firepower from all over the place to concentrate on, you know, everybody would be all zeroed in, and you just had to pick the telephone up, and you had the right word, and they were there to help you. It was really good.